Right, so yes, my name is James Bennett. I work at the DSEL's Wargaming Historical Analysis team. As game designers in the MOD, we stress the importance of playtesting, as do all wargaming professionals. And the handbook provides us with a useful overarching framework for how this should be undertaken. And what I'm going to do here is talk a little bit more about the kind of details and the nuances of this framework and how we actually playtest in practice. I'm also going to highlight some of the problems and pitfalls that we have encountered during playtesting by reflecting on a series of war games we ran as part of the previous Vice Chief of the Defence Staff's wargaming series. And I'll explain how we mitigated some of the issues that we encountered, with the intent being to highlight lessons that we have learned from playtesting games with very senior audiences. So the Wargaming Handbook states that playtesting is critical to deliver all wargames successfully, the desired outcome of which should be that the sponsor, game director, and all members of the wargame team are confident that the game can be set up, executed with a full player contingent, deliver the required outputs, and meet the overall aim, which is something that Graham pointed out earlier as well. On a functional level, this means giving confidence. This giving confidence essentially translates to three things, which is training people, testing your supporting systems and your enablers, and testing your mechanics and game balance. It is worth noting that playtesting priorities may vary between these elements depending on the nature of the game in question. Playtesting a tactical or operational level board game would likely focus on testing the game's mechanics and balance, whereas playtesting a multi-cell seminar war game would focus on training people and testing the game's supporting systems. The Wargaming Handbook outlines a five-step overarching process covering the design and execution of a war game, and playtesting takes place across, I would say, both the design and development steps of this process. Playtesting can also then be broken down into a four-stage process, which is internal playtesting, integrated systems testing, the test exercise, and then rehearsal. So on this slide are the definitions of two of these as stated in the handbook. My first observation is that in practice, internal playtesting almost always becomes a series of playtests of increasing complexity. These playtests focus on rapid iteration of ideas to see if they work, designing the basic flow of the game, and focusing on refining the required inputs and outputs. In the case of a multi-cell game, development should initially focus on each cell individually rather than on the interactions between them. At this point, the developers should also aim to get a sense of how long each individual cell's activities are expected to take so that they can begin to construct a coherent turn structure, and early versions of any game components which are required can be produced and go through testing. As the game design develops and the core design solidifies, further internal playtests are generally necessary. These are still characterized by rapid iteration, but will begin to test the interactions between your cells. These playtests should now be attended by additional playtesters outside of the design team, but many of these playtesters should be carefully selected to be friendly forces who appreciate that many elements of the game design will still be rough around the edges. In our case, that would potentially mean analysts from other teams across the lab. Once inputs and outputs have been solidified, further playtests can then begin to develop the game's adjudication process or processes, as well as integrating data capture systems. My second observation is that the integrated systems test generally should not be considered a specific playtest event in itself, but the system testing should be introduced gradually as playtest developing complexity. Essentially, as the game design solidifies, we transition from development to testing, integrating systems as and when we can. I would also advocate that a great deal of thought be given as to when it is appropriate to invite the game sponsors and or game director. Given how rapidly the design process should be iterating, and elements of the game will still be very much works in progress, it can potentially be counterproductive to invite outside criticism at this point. The design team should use their knowledge of the personalities they are dealing with in order to make a call on this. If the sponsor is experienced in the game design process and has a good working relationship with the team, then their presence at early stages and playtests may be beneficial. But if not, it may be beneficial to wait later in the process until you invite such input. In relation to the test exercise part of the cycle, I've observed that in test exercises, they generally develop through what I would term as full-scale internal playtests and then into full-scale stakeholder playtests. A full-scale internal playtest aims, for the first time, to test all of the Wargames active processes while working together, including multi-cell interactions, adjudication, data transfer systems. Running the game in its entirety will allow for substantive testing of the game's data capture processes and training of the data capture personnel. The sponsor should now attend the playtest at this point, especially if they have not been involved up until this point. This test should run the game under normal expected conditions and should not attempt to overly stress or break the system. Any problems which arise at this point are those which would be expected during any normal run-through, and if processes falter, then they will most likely need to be redesigned so that they function correctly. A full-scale stakeholder playtest then exposes the game to a wider audience and can stress-test the game's systems. At this point, the design team should be confident enough in the design and processes to expose it to a wider stakeholder audience outside of just the sponsor and game director in order to invite wider commentary. Additionally, this is an opportunity to familiarize them with the expected inputs and outputs of the game and communicate any risks or weaknesses and limitations in the design which have thus far been identified. For the design team, this playtest can also be used to start stress testing the game systems in edge cases to see whether they operate effectively and to identify weaknesses or areas that can only cope with limited stress. At the test or rehearsal, we can expect questions from the customer and players along the lines of, how does this inform my question? The tests are therefore checking that the war game is fit for purpose and that the gaming approach is correct for the aim that has been set. All of these playtests should give your facilitators, adjudicators, and data capture team valuable practice and generate confidence that they know exactly what is required from them in their roles. They should also test the analysis. We need to know whether we can use the data, or we use the data that we gain in whatever analytical approaches that we intend to use, and we also need to see at the rehearsal whether there are any other data capture opportunities that we may have missed. In relation to the rehearsal, it is also important to note that it should take place ideally in the exact same situation, location, and circumstances as the final event. It should familiarize the game team with the environment and the game setup, and should be used to spot any unexpected problems, such as rooms being too far away from each other, where players can go for breaks, and whether the actual rooms themselves are directly fit for purpose, i.e. can they be rearranged to suit your needs, are they big enough, do they have the required technological enablers, and are these fully functional? Additionally, if the rehearsal date is near to the execution date, then there is the possibility that materials can just be left in place, meaning that the setup time and effort will be greatly reduced on the day. I know that some of that sounds relatively obvious, but when you are working with a military audience, sometimes you simply don't have access to locations that you're meant to be working in. So although it's kind of, you definitely want to do it, in practice it can be very hard to actually implement that. I'm sorry that this is a bit small and that some of the red is a little hard to read. So the next series of slides are going to describe some of the challenges we had to overcome when playtesting games in the Vice Chief of the Defence Staff's Wargame series. The process flow, shown here, is from the Modern Deterrence Wargame, which was run in 2017, and demonstrates the complexity of a multi-cell seminar wargame. The game contained four cells operating concurrently, so we had our grey cell, which represented US and NATO alliance political and military direction, a blue cell representing UK Paul Mill direction up to a four-star level, a red cell representing the enemy actor, and a control cell. Information needed to be cross-briefed in multiple areas with lots of interaction taking place between the cells. The game had tight and incredibly well-planned timings, which were at points down to five-minute intervals, shuffling people between rooms and making sure that information was going to the right places. And the rest of the presentation is going to discuss some, but by no means all, of the major issues we encountered when playtesting this game and others in the series. So, and it will identify and provide a number of mitigations for the problems that we encountered along the way. So whilst war games at this level will be attended by senior audiences, in reality these individuals are almost never available for playtests. A problem this leads to is that when designing and testing inputs and outputs from yourselves, how can the game designers create a system that reasonably abstracts a real-world process which may only be seen or used by a small number of very senior individuals and about which very little may actually be known? Or, to put it more simply, when playtesting, how can decision-making processes and outputs of very senior individuals be credibly understood and replicated by analysts or members of your game design team. We mitigated this problem by involving representatives of the players as soon as possible in the game design process. These representatives were selected because they knew how the seniors would think. This also provided a number of additional benefits. The representatives could be relied upon to report back to their seniors about the game's design and what they should expect on the day. This effectively provided us with a free briefing to our otherwise unavailable participants. This engagement does, however, need to be handled with caution. If engaged too early in the process and faced with an immature design, these representatives can give negative feedback to your seniors. And if engaged too late, then their feedback cannot be incorporated as the design process will have progressed too far and the remaining time will be limited. For one of the games in the series, we wanted to be certain that the game design was fit for purpose. And given that seniors would not be available to verify the design before the event, we organised a second run-through of the game in its entirety with a slightly less senior, in this case, 1-2-star audience. It is worth, however, noting that the greater the gap between the levels of audience, the greater the potential error. So OF5 level people thinking that they know the minds of 4-stars can start messing with the credibility of your outputs. The run-through served a multitude of purposes. It gave us time to adapt to the game design, gave us a complete dress rehearsal playtest in the correct location, and it also generated some output which we then actually used as inputs into the final execution. Finally, using retired seniors can also be an invaluable way of bringing in external expertise to fill in knowledge gaps. It is, however, worth noting that desk officers can in some cases be wary of retired senior officers, as they might feel that they can be reported onto their respective bosses. Retired senior officers should therefore be chosen with care and introduced accordingly. While the game design team may be intimately familiar with the game's design as well as the required outputs, they may not have the seniority required to shape the direction when a room contains multiple 3- and 4-stars who will not be entirely conversant with the game's design and expected outputs. Indeed, this problem is particularly acute if the outputs are required in a specific format and at a specific time, meaning discussions require quite a tight measure of control. In order to mitigate this problem, we selected a player, who in this case was one of the sponsors, to be a chairperson for the discussion, and arranged a pre-briefing with them before the game, during which we explained the required outputs and suggested how the conversation should be steered. The intent was that this one senior participant, with them on side, we would have an increased amount of control in the room and would therefore be more likely to generate the necessary outputs as and when they were required. However, in reality, this mitigation was only partially effective, as a single meeting with the player did not give us enough time to fully explain and buy them into our process, and so their shaping of the event did not fully match our intent. In the future, we will only take this approach if we can get adequate time with the selected player and to fully buy them into the game's design and processes. Using retired seniors, once again, can also help with the design, but also they can be used to facilitate the game. Being part of the design process, they should have a comprehensive understanding of your design and your overall objectives, whilst also having the seniority to impose themselves into a high-level discussion during the game's execution. Due to the sensitivity of some of the locations we have used during the Vice Chief of the Defence Staff's Wargaming series, they have not been available for us to use beforehand to test or rehearse in. This means that and can lead to the team being unfamiliar with the physical environment and the technological enablers that are present in the location. In order to mitigate this problem, we arranged a short time slot to undertake a basic reconnaissance of the location in an attempt to spot any challenges in advance and to achieve at least a basic level of familiarisation. When one of the games in the series was based heavily on the use of virtual teleconferencing capabilities, we found another facility which had a similar overall setup and ran the playtest there, allowing us to gain some level of confidence that the design was executable in practice. In cases where we genuinely could not playtest elements of the wargame design, we settled for undertaking rehearsal of concept drills. A rock drill is a dry walkthrough of the design plan involving stakeholders, facilitators, and potentially players or player representatives to ensure a shared understanding of the design and its goals. Finally, if this issue can be anticipated in advance, one future mitigation we intend to try will be to run the event at our own facility, where the game designers have full control of the environment. This is something that we will have an expanded capability to do so as the DSTL Wargaming Centre of Excellence comes online and reaches full operational capability in the near future. So in conclusion, the playtest has covered, the presentation has covered the playtest cycle and various problems that we've bumped into. There hasn't been time to cover every problem, but I'd be happy to discuss a few more issues in the Q&A if it's a topic of interest. Thank you.